Man 5 about the propeller that you were bringing back?
Well, first of all, the customs wouldn't let it come by, but we whipped it on a lorry and took it. When we got it to the train, it wouldn't go in the luggage department by 2 inches. So it had to be left at Southampton Central Station. It followed up later, though, eventually. He got it in the end, actually. I should like to mention, while I was at Gritalli, I went down with malaria. And the Italian doctor attached to the station injected in the cheeks of my bottom. Then the next day in the chest, and although at the time it was touch and go, I broke sweat and survived. I was weak for a few days, but I never had any effects of malaria after that in Italy. But when I returned to England, coming to a different climate, I had it reoccurrence for years. And in the end, my doctor suggested that I should try for a pension. He'd sign the papers and all this business, which I did. And I had a pension at the end. I took a lump sum and cleared it up.
If I could summarise your career for a bit, you were drafted from Crystal Palace to Cattwater Seaplane Base at Plymouth, where you fell ill with recurrence of malaria and then jaundice at the same time. After treatment in Stonehouse Naval Hospital and convalescence at Truro VAD, you returned to Cattwater. You're now part of the newly formed RAF. How did you feel about this change over?
Well, in the first place, I thought it was a good thing. There had been a bit of animosity between the IA people, admirals and generals. Some said, being the senior service, we were getting the first pick of the best machines and all this business. And I really thought it was for the best. And it proved to be so. But at the time, I felt that we were in the minority somehow to the Royal Flying Corps. In other words, we got information that in the new service, men were joining up as sergeants in some cases. Well, we'd been around in the Naval Air Service for about 3 years or so, and we still hadn't advanced very far. I was a leading mechanic now, but I was still wearing naval uniform, although it was the Royal Air Force. And there was a little feeling amongst, I feel, us naval types, that we, instead of being the senior service now, we were inclined to be the underdog. I may be wrong. And so anyway, when I got back to Cattwater, I was drafted on loan to Torquay.
Could I ask, had you had to give up your hammocks now?
Oh yes, we'd gone from hammocks to the three boards, low trestles and a mattress, and the blanket and pillow business, whereby for 3 years we'd slept in our hammocks, slung them wherever we went, so to speak, Felixstowe, Italy, and all round.
How about naval issue rum?
Well, we never had that in the Naval Air Service, unless you were aboard ship, such as an aircraft carrier. We were allowed so many pence per week, or supposed to be, in any way. We never had rum, nor tobacco.
Do you know whether beaching parties bringing aircraft up slipways ever had rum?
No, I don't. Not to my knowledge. At Felixstowe, we had what they call the wader party. They were in these waders and they were able to wade up chest high to bring in the seaplanes or the flying boats, put them on the cradles and so on. But to my knowledge, there was no rum.
What was your official rank in the Royal Air Force now?
At that time, well, a corporal. Although I went, as I understood, to Torquay as a sergeant on corporal's pay, which was a thing that was carried out in the army, more or less. And while there, at Torquay, I was responsible for the erection of the two machines. They were having two machines and a balloon. It was only a small station. And it was at the Basaloons on the outer harbour, on the side of the outer harbour of Torquay. And coal tunnels went under the road. These had been cleaned out and were being used as workshops for the erection of these two machines. That was the amount of aircraft, or the number of aircraft, that they were going to have, I understood. After the erection of the first one, it was my duty as responsible to fly as observer with Lieutenant Stott. So Lieutenant Stott and myself are the first two to fly from Tor Bay, from Torquay Station, actually. While, as the observer, we had no wireless. We had a speaking tube from the front cockpit to the back cockpit. You could speak through the tube to each other. And we carried pigeons. And that's where I met my wife. My wife joined the Women's Royal Air Force, or I believe it was then the Women's Auxiliary Air Force. And she was in Mobile. That helped the accommodation question. She joined in London, was sent to Torquay, her hometown, so she could live home. Went into uniform and all the rest and done exactly the same as anybody else. And when she came, although she was clerical, she was asked or sent up with the corporal of the pigeons to train the pigeons for use by the aircraft personnel on patrol or anything. And that's how I first met her, as I sat in the cockpit with behind Lieutenant Stott. She brought my basket of pigeons. The pigeon basket had a partition from one corner to the other with a pigeon each side with its label, that if you came down you give latitude and longitude if you knew it, and sent off your pigeon. So anyway, we done the first test flight from off Torbay and landed. It was rather a bumpy landing. It was a lovely day, beautiful sunshine on a glassy type of sea. And as he came in, we couldn't see sea from water. And we just touched down and bounced and touched down and bounced. We didn't porpoise at all, we just bounced. And he asked me through the tube what I thought of it. And I said, awful. And he said, yes, we'll take off and further over near Brixham. So we did that, and then went over Brixham, and I noticed, looking over the side of the cockpit, the fleet were in. Many of them were mine sweepers, used as mine sweepers now. How neatly they were turning to the tide, and they seemed to be spaced evenly apart. As we went over the top, we picked up the River Dart on the way to Plymouth, and then out to sea and came back picking up a few known marks like buoys and so on, and eventually came back to Torbay and made a landing away from the Royal Pier of Torquay over more the Brixham side. Then taxied in, up for a coffee. There's quite a few people to see us return, as Now, that was the first flight, and different ones being billeted out on different people had said, well, they're flying today sort of business. And had our coffee, and that night I went to the home of my future wife, and we'd been married 54 years, August the 4th of this year. That's how we met.
Were there any regulations about members of the women's services walking out in uniform?
Oh, yes, so there was with us. We weren't, I mean, in those days, even brothers, if he was a private in the army and his brother was an officer, they weren't supposed to be out seen together anyway. And my wife, on one occasion, she was in civilian, she danced with an officer, and he saw her home, apparently, and she was pulled up and fined, but because she was in civilians, the fine was refunded. That's all I can say about that. I don't know any more.
Were you at Torbay at the end of the war?
Well, yes, because when I got, I was recalled to Catwater because of two flying boats. Two flying boats had landed, small flying boats, and they'd been incorrectly constructed. The timbers should have been let into the keel and fastened. These timbers had been cut offshore, so when they landed, the planking was unsupported and split. They had a job to get them in. They might have sunk with the water coming in. Well, I was urgently recalled, as I was the only boat builder lossman in that area. And Catwater knew this, and I was recalled to put this job right. Well, when I arrived, Strong, the engineer officer, who had been a PO at Felixstowe, he had recommended me for promotion. And when the list came out, it wasn't confirmed. So I was still a corporal. More or less. And so I had went and saw him in the office, asked for an interview, and quietly we had it out, and he said he'd, if I done finish the job, he'd see that it got came through on that. And I said, no, I'm finished now. I don't seem as though the serviceman who's been in it some time is going to get anywhere. I'll put in for a commission. So I wrote him a letter. He tried to advise me against it, as I was a mechanic. And anyway, I said he couldn't stop it going to the CO. He agreed, and the letter went to the CO. Well, eventually, about probably a fortnight afterwards, I was called before the CO, who told me the same story, that they could make a pilot in 3 months, where it took 5 years or thereabout to make a good mechanic. And was I sure that I wanted to do this? And I said, yes. He said, why are your reasons? I said, I'd like to fly on my own, as well as probably come on the engineering side, commission ranked, taking the two. And so he said, in the end, he said, all right, well, he recommended me. He said, but you'll have to go before the Admiral of the Port. So eventually, a week or two afterwards, this happened. I was called before the Admiral of the Port. He was making a visit, normal visit, and taking everything like this in his stride. He was a real tough type Admiral, and he more or less went over the same ground as the CO had been about being a mechanic and so on. And he said, have you done any flying? And I said, well, very little, sir. I said, but I've just flown in a short at Torquay. Anywhere before that, I said, well, I flew a couple of times in airships in Italy, blimp airships. And he looked up to me and said, airships? You don't bloody well call that flying, do you? And I can see myself now. I was given a display of how an airship in a gusty wind bumped up and down when the gust caught it on the front. Now the chassis, or the B2-seater fuselage, got a side motion as well. And I said, and I gave a display of this in front of them. Anyway, he said, well, I think to turning to the CO that we ought to give him a flight and his nerve should be tested by the station doctor. And if it's not satisfactory, it's as well to fail him here as to go messing about further on. So it was an awful day. It was raining and windy, and of course weather conditions in those days were something. They had to be taken into consideration. So the CO told the chief to ring up the duty flight, and the CO spoke to the duty pilot and told him what he wanted, and I took all the papers down, and we went for about half an hour, I think it was, flight round Plymouth Sound over Drake's Island, and back, landed. And when I got down there, by the way, the pilot said to me, what's going on sort of business, you see? This is a pretty fine day to want to go flying and all this, you see? Anyway, I took the papers then up to the doctor, and I knew the sergeant of the sick bay. That's what I want to say.
Where was the doctor?
He was in Plymouth. And I had to sit there and wait for his return. So when he arrived, he was told by the sick berth sergeant what I was there for. And he said, well, he ought to be all right now. His nerves ought to have settled down. Anyway, he did give me a heart check and the rest of it, and signed up the papers, which I took back to the CO's office.
Did you ever get a permanent commission?
Well, what happened was that I had to wait another fortnight and then proceed to Bristol with two others, Sergeant Squires and a corporal like myself. And there we went to a house that had been requisitioned near Bristol Aviation Works. We found in there three elderish colonels who apparently had been on the reserve and been recalled to do a job like this, and a captain, Scarlett, I think his name was. Now, these colonels had to decide, it was a selection committee, really, they had to decide whether we were fit to hold commission rank. First of all, there was a doctor there, an old doctor. He sat us in chairs, one each side of the room, gave us an inspection, then stood at the fireplace and said to the other two, good gracious, the dirt in your ears, one could grow peas in it.